3, the sojourn at Amathus. The Master and his apostles remained near Amathus for almost 3 weeks. The apostles continued to preach twice daily to the multitude, and Jesus preached each Sabbath afternoon. It became impossible to continue the Wednesday playtime, so Andrew arranged that 2 apostles should rest each day of the 6 days in the week, while all were on duty during the Sabbath services. Peter, James, and John did most of the public preaching. Philip, Nathanael, Thomas, and Simon did much of the personal work and conducted classes for special groups of inquirers. The twins continued their general police supervision, while Andrew, Matthew, and Judas developed into a general managerial committee of 3, although each of these 3 also did considerable religious work. Andrew was much occupied with the task of adjusting the constantly recurring misunderstandings and disagreements between the disciples of John and the newer disciples of Jesus. Serious situations would arise every few days, but Andrew, with the assistance of his apostolic associates, managed to induce the contending parties to come to some sort of agreement, at least temporarily. Jesus refused to participate in any of these conferences, neither would he give any advice about the proper adjustment of these difficulties. He never once offered a suggestion as to how the apostles should solve these perplexing problems. When Andrew came to Jesus with these questions, he would always say, "It is not wise for the host to participate in the family troubles of his guests. A wise parent never takes sides in the petty quarrels of his own children." The Master displayed great wisdom and manifested perfect fairness in all of his dealings with his apostles and with all of his disciples. Jesus was truly a master of men. He exercised great influence over his fellow men because of the combined charm and force of his personality. There was a subtle commanding influence in his rugged, nomadic, and homeless life. There was intellectual attractiveness and spiritual drawing power in his authoritative manner of teaching, in his lucid logic, his strength of reasoning, his sagacious insight, his alertness of mind, his matchless poise, and his sublime tolerance. He was simple, manly, honest, and fearless. With all of this physical and intellectual influence manifest in the Master's presence, there were also all those spiritual charms of being which have become associated with his personality: patience, tenderness, meekness, gentleness, and humility. Jesus of Nazareth was indeed a strong and forceful personality. He was an intellectual power and a spiritual stronghold. His personality not only appealed to the spiritually minded women among his followers, but also to the educated and intellectual Nicodemus and to the hardy Roman soldier, the captain stationed on guard at the cross, who, when he had finished watching the Master die, said, "Truly, this was a son of God." And red-blooded, rugged Galilean fishermen called him Master. The pictures of Jesus have been most unfortunate. These paintings of the Christ have exerted a deleterious influence on youth. The temple merchants would hardly have fled before Jesus if he had been such a man as your artists usually have depicted. His was a dignified manhood. He was good, but natural. Jesus did not pose as a mild, sweet, gentle, and kindly mystic. His teaching was thrillingly dynamic. He not only meant well, but he went about actually doing good. The Master never said, "Come to me, all you who are indolent, and all who are dreamers." But he did many times say, "Come to me, all you who labor, and I will give you rest, spiritual strength." The Master's yoke is, indeed, easy, but even so, he never imposes it. Every individual must take this yoke of his own free will. Jesus portrayed conquest by sacrifice, the sacrifice of pride and selfishness. By showing mercy, he meant to portray spiritual deliverance from all grudges, grievances, anger, and the lust for selfish power and revenge. And when he said, "Resist not evil," he later explained that he did not mean to condone sin or to counsel fraternity with iniquity. He intended the more to teach forgiveness, to resist not evil treatment of one's personality, evil injury to one's feelings of personal dignity.